Next case this morning is United States versus Thomas.
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Ross Eagle and I represent Kendrick Thomas. One of the benefits of coming early to your oral argument is you get to see other people argue, and sometimes you pick up a case, a style, or an argument that you think actually applies to your case. So with that in mind, let me say that I think this presents a good news, bad news situation for Mr. Thomas. As you know, there's a two-part argument, the first part being the overrepresentation of his criminal history, and the second part having to do with the reasonableness of that sentence. Obviously, I'm not going to discuss issue B at all, considering that Claiborne and Reed are pending and this court's precedent is well established. As to the overrepresentation of his criminal history, I don't really think I can add anything that isn't already in the briefs about what his history is. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. The gist of the argument is, as is written, his criminal history, the severity of it, as in the offenses he committed, is minimal. He has about 4 points for driving on a suspended license. The basis of those suspensions was having too many moving violations. It was not a DUI or anything that, at least under Illinois law, is mandatory revocations. These were statutory. He has a reckless conduct, and he has a contributing to delinquency of a minor, both over 11 years old, also both misdemeanors. While the government is correct in pointing out that he has a felony conviction, that is one of the reasons that Mr. Thomas had only asked for a criminal history adjustment of one. He's not asking that be discounted completely and that he go back to a criminal history one. He believes, however, that he should not be in category, lumped into the category with career criminal offenders, given the lack of severity. While it's numerous, none of the individual offenses believe should cumulatively put him into this.
But do you disagree with the judge's statement that the sheer number here was extraordinary?
I disagree to the extent that when you look at simply numbers and not what the underlying offense, you get an overrepresentation. To say that he has 10 convictions and yet the vast majority of them were for driving offenses that were non-violent, non-dangerous, I would disagree with Judge Phillip on that.
Okay. So moving violations means he was speeding?
The basis of his suspension. No, the moving violations he received.
Those are licenses.
The points were for having a suspended license. So
for all we know, he was driving on a suspended license, but he was dutifully going at 55 miles an hour down the highway, et cetera.
You could make that assumption. Usually 6303 is driving on suspended license, you're pulled over for committing something, but the offense that he was given, is simply a license issue. And what I bring out is that his license was suspended for having too many moving violations. It wasn't the basis for why he had a suspended license wasn't for injuring anybody in a crash or driving while intoxicated. So I think, yes, when you take those low-level offenses, a regulation offense, if you will, and use it to boost him all the way up to the highest category, we believe that is an unreasonable sentence.
But the district judge also says, not only does he find that there's really a large number, he says, sure, I can see that some of them are pretty trivial, but there are some others that are more serious, the battery, I guess, in particular. So I get the sense the district judge was trying to balance it in his mind.
Judge, the difference is there's the first category all the way up to the career criminal offender. And
1 to 6,
And while I have mentioned that yes, he does have the felony that was in his background, and then there was a battery, misdemeanor, but a battery, but those should have been taken into account. But when you add in all of the other ones, it becomes an overrepresentation. And that somewhere between the 1 and the 6, and in this case, I think Mr. Thomas asked for the 5, I think that would have been a sufficient but not greater than necessary sentence, and that by going to 6, it became unreasonable. And if there are no more questions, I'll reserve any time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Levin.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Joel Levin, and I'm an assistant U.S. attorney here in the Northern District of Illinois. The defendant in this case was convicted of selling crack cocaine, and prior to that conviction, in approximately a 10-year period, he had sustained the 17 convictions that we've heard about. The judge in this case, and it's very clear from the record, considered the advisory guidelines. He considered all of the 3553A factors. He considered the mitigating arguments that were advanced by the defendant. And after considering all of that, he decided that a low-end guideline sentence was appropriate.
Mr. Levin, can you remind me what the range would have been if he had gotten the 5 for criminal history versus?
Yes, he's a level 31, category 6, so his range was 188 to 235 for the level 6, but I was just looking at that. It would have been 168 to 210 had he been a 5. So had he been one level lower, as the defendant would like to have been, it would have been a guideline sentence in that range as well. So
the 188 would have been in that range. We don't know. Of course, Judge Phillip might have wanted to go down to 168 anyway. But
That's right. But it would have been right. It would have been within that range. So it is true that a number of these misdemeanor convictions were not the most serious offenses, but the judge took that into account. The judge also took into account that some of them were more serious. There was a felony conviction for an aggravated battery. There was a misdemeanor conviction for attempted aggravated battery. There were convictions for resisting peace officers, two of those. So given the complete picture, which is what the judge looked at, taking into account everything, he concluded that 188, a low-end sentence, was appropriate. And with respect to the number of convictions, he found that notwithstanding the fact that a number were less serious, still, it had implications in terms of the recidivism of someone like this who had been in the state system, in and out of the state system, had received lenient sentences, but they really had not had the impact in terms of deterring him from other criminal conduct. So the judge took into account the nature of the convictions as well as the implications in terms of recidivism. So it's hard to imagine a judge making a more careful and thorough and methodical review of the guidelines and the advisory guidelines and the 3553A factors as well as the mitigating circumstances than Judge Phillip made here. So based on this record, Your Honors, we would ask that the sentence be affirmed.
Thank you. Much time. You have 5 minutes, Mr. Eagle.
I'll be very brief. I only wanted to address the leniency that counsel had brought up, that Mr. Thomas had been shown in state court. Fact is that Mr. Thomas, for all of these offenses that counsel has been naming in his part of the record, the greatest sentence he ever received was only 180 days in prison, which I think isn't a question of leniency. I think it more points out the lack of severity of these offenses. And then to use that where the maximum was 100, what he received was 180 days, to then use that.
The whole bizarre thing about the whole criminal history category. It's always bothered me ever since it happened, because if you have somebody who has committed first-degree murder, they'll be in criminal history category 2, right?
Yes, Judge.
One conviction, that's it. But if the one is a whopper, so what? You're still in number 2. So you get a benefit that way. But somebody like your fellow who's got 17 convictions, they got them all up, and he gets in criminal history category 6. But if the judges recognize that, why judges can take that into consideration in determining what the proper sentence should be under an advisory guideline regime.
And, Judge, that gets back to what a previous counsel had said. If it operated as a truly advisory guideline system, that might be correct. However, with the precedent set by courts, basically everybody, while counsel alluded to the Western District of Wisconsin, most of the people in the Northern District of Illinois are getting guideline sentences as well. If there are no further sentences.
Unfortunately, you're in a small district with only 2 judges. So.
If there's nothing else, Judge.
I don't believe so. Thank you, Mr. Eagle. You were appointed in this case as well?
Yes, Judge, I was.
Thank you very much for the representation of your client. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.